to make sure that you all heard and the Grant family heard that when we arrived in Sacramento, just not knowing the outlay of parking caused me a few minutes delay in getting into the actual hearing and finding the room and whatnot. And what really captured my attention, one of our brothers was inside and told me that Councilperson Brooks was speaking and that there was this period of public forum. So I thought that I had made it on time to at least represent some of the concern of us here in the town hall of the Grant family before the assembly. So when I walked in, others were speaking. I didn't know who those others were, but I could hear that they were speaking in opposition to Assembly Bill 312. The young man who was in communication with me, one of our Sacramento helpers there, said, well, just get in line and go to the mic. So the last man was speaking, and I approached the mic area. The chairperson, Mr. Solario of Orange County, never looked at me. And I'm raising my hand, and he's ignoring that I'm standing in here. I can see this. A staffer comes to me and says, well, you know, the public forum is over. This was the last speaker that's speaking now. But were you speaking to the affirmative or the negative of the bill? I said, well, I'm here on behalf of the family of Oscar Grant. The young man said, well, hold on one second. He walked away. I don't know if he went to the chairperson or someone else on the staff. He came back to me when they went on to other dialogue among the elected officials. And he came back to me and asked me a question. Here was his question. He said to me, who is Oscar Grant? Now, given that this is a staff person who works in the assembly for these representatives, perhaps the chairperson of the meeting, that is being confronted by legislation that would not exist were it not for the murder of Brother Oscar. For this staffer who was helping to manage this meeting to ask me the question, who is Oscar Grant, really shows us what we're confronted with. So when these Orange County representatives fail to push through a bill, it's because to them there's no human suffering attached to this bill. And I know the family did not make it there, and I'm almost glad you didn't, because if you heard them ask in person, who is Oscar Grant, then we would have had to keep our prayers up to make sure that the family did not go off on these assembly people inside of this committee meeting. Now, as we are now looking at this bill in committee for public safety, Assembly Bill 312, now we're learning government on the go, state government on the go. I didn't know that it was fully in the hands of that chairperson at that point to determine that they would vote on that bill or not. Right. Two assembly people, Assemblyman Hill, who I'm not sure where he's from, and Assemblyman Fortani, who's from somewhere in the Bay Area, stated publicly, we support the bill. In this committee, of which there are six members, a simple majority is needed in order to pass it over for further vote of the assembly. Four of those assembly people are Democrats. Two of those assembly people are Republicans. The Republicans include one, I don't have the list in front of me, but one from the Bakersfield area, whose name is Gilmore, and I don't know the name of the other Republican, but according to those who work in government, the staffers of Assemblyman Swanson, in essence, don't expect the Republican too to move at all. But there are others
some from this area who would comprise the 4 votes needed in order to pass AB 312, and that it is not done within the next couple of weeks, meaning if they can't secure these votes, and I don't have a date certain, I just know in the next couple of weeks, in the month of May, the staffers described that that bill being called up in committee, that it isn't passed in the next few weeks, that it becomes what they call a 2-year bill. Now, I don't know where you get these notions of a process that a bill would take 2 years to clear. When Violet Closs was killed, and there was a drive for 3 strikes to become law, I would imagine that it did not take 2 years for it to get where it got. What would make a law protecting people from the guns of law enforcement officers, what would make it take 2 years to get before the floor? And then the dialogue was, and even after 2 years, you're not guaranteed that it would ever clear in those 2 years. So we have now a few weeks to respond to Assemblyman Skinner of Berkeley, of where? Now, we learned that every Friday that these assembly people must work in their district offices serving their constituents. As Councilperson Brooks said, someone sent an email to the chairman of the committee, and their staff, however they did it, kicked it back, declaring, "You're not in this district, we don't have to listen to you." Now, I don't know the full range of Assemblyman Skinner's district, but if you live in or near Berkeley, California, you ought to want to know. And even if you don't, you ought to find your way to finding out where her office is in the city of Berkeley, so that on Friday, a visit can be paid. On Monday through Thursday, calls can be made, because Assemblyman Skinner is one of the 4 votes that are needed. I said that they've already secured 2 votes publicly. Assemblyman Hill and Assemblyman Fortani. The final vote among Democrats, really what's being demonstrated is, there's the fine line nowadays between Democrat and Republican, and you can't always see it. You all with me now? Mr. Solario, I'm told he's from the Whittier area. I'm not sure exactly which city in Southern California that he represents. He's the chairman of the committee. He himself is a Democrat. But if you know liberal conservative politic dialogue, Orange County is one of the more conservative areas in the state. So now, Mr. Solario has a choice to make. What our charge is now is to put him in the valley of decision. He's going to make a moral choice. So that when his staff came to me and asked the question, who is Oscar Grant? And now we're charged with letting him know who is Oscar Grant. You all with me now? So that he can't look at a bill and take it as a negotiating tool for other things he might want to do for politically. He's going to have to look at this bill and consider the life that have been lost, the blood that have been shed, not just of Oscar, but as Sister Desley said, 3 people, all blacks, have been murdered by BART police. Now, why was there such opposition? I was a little surprised. I walked in, and the room was packed. It was packed enough that there were no seats. I couldn't sit down, which was fine. I don't mind standing up. But speaking at the microphone when I walked in were law enforcement union representatives. Assemblyman Amiano said afterwards that every law enforcement officer in the state was represented by these unions. Now, I want to ID these unions for you. That I do have. sitting there speaking against AB 312 was the California Highway Patrol. Sitting there to speak against AB 312 was Riverside Police Department. Sitting there speaking against AB 312 was the Los Angeles Sheriff Department. Sitting there and standing there to speak against AB 312 was the Statewide Union of Police Chiefs. Sitting there speaking against AB 312 was the Peace Officers Association. And the final one, I believe, was the Police Peace Officers and the POA. The Statewide Association for Officer Unions. And his words were that every police officer in the state was there representing. Now, the few words I heard them say that got my attention was this. He declared, one of the spokespersons, that AB 312 sets a precedent. Their concern is that if the state of California can say in the issue of BART that a civilian oversight review board should be established, their concern is that if the state can mandate a system of oversight for BART, then maybe the state will take a look at the cities and the sheriff departments and those other law enforcement entities, and that the state might eventually, with precedent being set, weigh in on every law enforcement authority in the state to demand that those authorities do right by the people. Well, in my mind, that's a good precedent to set. Because I know LAPD kills people. I know OPD kills people. I know SFPD kills people. I know Richmond PD kills people. I know Antioch PD kills people. And that when those persons are brutalized by law enforcement, there is a horrific record where district attorneys are concerned, in which they routinely fail to prosecute any law enforcement officer for brutality and murder cases in their districts. So is it a right thing for the state to expedite BART process? Someone reported, I think it was Christoph, that after the last murder, that BART had a series of meetings and declared that they would open conversation for some kind of oversight. Now, be clear, in the world of big business and politics, there's very little morality happening here. The question really is, how do we get out of this struggle with the least amount of financial loss? That's the real question. So will we talk about Oscar Grant now? Yeah, we'll talk about it right now because we don't know the longer term financial fallout. So 10 years ago, when BART murdered someone, and a few years before that, when BART murdered someone, its police department, there's dialogue for the short term. But what they don't count on is a public that demands change for the long term. And so we appreciate Assemblyman Amiano's effort. But our man, he was there, I looked at him, he was bloodshot red, he was angry. When he came, and Brother Jimmy saw him, the man was, he was so red, he was purple red. Because he was angry coming into that meeting thinking, perhaps, that with four Democrats and two Republicans, that this is a no-brainer. That the Democrats are going to accept that a bill passed through that provides oversight against law enforcement, in this case BART, that has murdered somebody on national TV. What the reality is, I would imagine that these assembly people are now concerned about the most powerful lobbying forces in the state. When we left that meeting, we went and met with the chief of staff for Assemblyman Swanson. for about an hour. And as we talked about the forces in that room, he said openly what we often hear under the table, but let me say it openly. He said the most powerful lobbying force in the state is the prison guard union. And I would imagine that the police officer union is somewhere near the top. And that whatever the prison guard union pushes, that the police officer union rarely would say anything contrary to the prison guard union. Because, as you know, we live in a criminal injustice system. Which is why we took the Caravan for Justice to raise the mantle of attention on the criminal injustice system. When there's crime, there's a call for more police. In Oakland, with the passage of Measure Y, for an example, the city has spent somewhere in the range of close to $30 million in law enforcement support, whatever that means, I think the hiring and recruitment of additional officers. They say that 63 or so of those officers are called problem-solving officers. How many of you have ever met a problem-solving officer in your community? Not one. But of course, one would think that every officer solves problems. But a few years ago, when it was offered that law enforcement and OPD should change their work schedules, that they would be in the street at high crime times, the greatest obstacle to putting law enforcement officers on the streets when crime is occurring, it wasn't the criminals. It wasn't a line of so-called criminals saying, don't change things. It wasn't members of the city council openly saying, don't change things. It was actually the police officers' union saying, don't change things, because the way things are, they didn't say it like this, but the way things are, when a problem happens late in the night and I'm in my home and I have to come back or stay on work extra time, the reality is the city pays millions and millions and millions of dollars in overtime pay. And the officers' union did not want to sacrifice overtime pay for regular scheduled pay. That if they were scheduled to work at a time when crime was high, then they would not secure for their officers the extra pay. In other words, the union didn't seem to have a heart for those that suffer in West, East, and North Oakland. But their power as a union is significant. It's soon as people begin to talk about community policing, the power of the union begins to demonstrate itself. I saw for the first time in the years I've been in Oakland, I've lived here since 91, I saw for the first time day before yesterday, or yesterday, pardon me, officers walk into the barbershop. I was waiting to get my hair cut, minding my business. I saw them come in, wanting to talk right there at 74th and MacArthur. So let me put up my newspaper so they don't see me, because I want to hear what they say. They didn't know that the barber they were talking to happened to be my brother named Muhammad. But that's fine. I wanted to hear what they had to say. So now, all of a sudden, you've got an appearance of a community policing effort. Two original brothers, they were Latino, Filipino. I'd like to see them come. And the barber said, well, you can come here and get your hair cut if you like. But the reality was, for all these years, that there's been a need for police to know people in the neighborhood. The only neighborhood it seems they've chosen to get acquainted in is the neighborhood where four other officers were murdered several weeks ago. So they walked the streets, and that's a good thing. I'm sure that there are those that compelled them to make themselves known in the neighborhoods.
Putting up new cameras too, brother.
Mm-hmm. Sir?
Putting up new cameras over there too.
You're putting up new cameras? Well, you know, the city already has systems, by the way, and law enforcement that alleged to detect every shot that fires.
That's right.
And they ought to be able to respond to an area base. I don't know how many millions were paid for that system. I'm sure it cost some. But have you noticed that very rarely is a murder in the city of Oakland solved? So now the issue that I'm raising here is the power of these unions. And as we're standing for justice with our caravan in town hall meetings, we all know we are dealing against a very powerful political force. But that's all right, because we're backed by justice. And as Sister Diana would say, our God is justice. And of course, the scripture says, if God be for you, it could say, what police union is really against you that has more power than you bring to the table? So now there are two assemblymen that we really need to communicate with our concern concerning AB 312. And we need to let the two that offer their support know that we see them and we thank them. We thank Assemblyman Fortani, who's from somewhere in the Bay Area. And we thank Assemblyman Hill. Give them a big round of applause. They spoke up quick. We didn't take them for a second because we wish them. Mr. Solario needs some convincing. You can go to the State of California website and find him. Get his email address, get his fax number, get his phone number, get his mailing address, and let's use whatever we have at our disposal to contact him. Now, if you say he won't speak to anyone that doesn't live in or consider the words of anyone that doesn't live in the district, well, how many of you know somebody in Southern California? As Sister Brooks said, tweet them. Facebook them. Tell those in other areas that may be in the districts of those persons that we want to influence. How many of you know or yourself live in Berkeley with Assemblyperson Skinner? You know somebody in Berkeley, it's right up the street. So now we need to make contact with Assemblyperson Skinner, for we're told that if they don't move this through committee soon, it becomes a two-year bill. And as we all know, I don't think we've got 2 years to wait. Because if there's another case of brutality, and at this point, no structural change has occurred to stop cases of brutality, if there's another case of brutality in or near the Bay Area, we can't say that the public will be as peaceful as it has been in this situation. We don't know what the responses might be from an angry public that does not trust that those that have justice in their hands to exercise would be just in the exercise of their authority. And so, sisters and brothers, AB 312 requires certainly our attention. Now, we want to encourage everyone. Yes, ma'am.
Fiona Ma.
Ah, that's the name. Fiona Ma was the unstated person, Democrat. Person from San Francisco. So we need to help on the problem then. And let me just remind you of what former Mayor Attorney General Brown told us in a dialogue one day. We were talking to him about Operation Nutcracker. We were challenging him on the use of language such as calling our young people urban terrorists and describing the beefs in our community as asymmetric warfare. We, in essence, hurled the liberal politician book at it, because for many years, he projected himself as such a politician. So we laid his own words in front of him, in which he declared that these efforts to fill prisons or this incarceration binge, in his words, was not a result of an increase in crime. He said that the incarceration binge was a result of the failure of capitalism. So we laid his words in front of him. In fact, he made light and other remarks of the war on drugs as being a setup, because I'm sure that in his years, having been known as Governor Moonbeam and joked by people, I'm sure that Jerry Brown knew somebody to smoke some weed. Y'all with me now? I'm not going to say he did. I don't know what he did. You need a vegetarian? Well, I guess he might smoke vegetables. But the point I'm raising here is he's not of one with a history that suggests that we should build and fill prisons. It was Ray Davis, when he was governor before Mr. Schwarzenegger, who made an open statement about those that have the possibility for parole with life sentences. He made a statement that while he's governor, the only way that you would get out on parole is in a pine wood box. Means you'll get out of San Quentin. You'll get out of Folsom or Soledad dead. I'm not signing any lifers parole. And he, for the most part, kept his word. He did that. So now that the prisons are overburdened and the state is in a position that it quite frankly can't afford to continue to incarcerate people as it has done. Last I checked, in a few weeks, they got to go back and redo the budget debate. Because after taking months beyond the deadline to pass a budget, they discovered, quote, that there's still a problem because they had not assessed the new tax income, which has gone down as a result of the housing crash. So now they've got another $8 billion problem to solve. And they've got to go back and begin to debate what's going to be cut. And while surely if a state has an $8 billion problem, or a city, Oakland as an example, has a multiple $1 million problem, the county has a multiple $1 million problem, something is going to have to be cut somewhere. But if that's the case, then now let's assess the power of these law enforcement unions. While everything else is cutting, law enforcement and incarceration is increasing. So as troublesome as the city budget is, it can, with public support, driven by lobbying efforts to gain the vote of an often partially ignorant electorate, they put out a bill and advertise it in such way. I mean, who would not say they want safer streets? Everybody wants safer streets. So they'll say, okay, let's call this Project Safe Streets. Vote for Project Safe Streets. Not saying to you that the police are not going to be trained any differently. If Mr. Meserly thought he was pulling a taser when he pulled a gun and fired a gun, alleging he thought it was a taser, what kind of training did Mr. Meserly have? That all the money that Bart possessed in his training system, did it do Mr. Meserly better on January the 1st of this year? The answer is no. So those that now see more law enforcement officers, the question becomes, are they trained any better than those that we have been engaging? When Mandelums was cussed out the night of that rally at Fruitvale Bart by members of the public, I told him they weren't cussing you personally, Mr. Mayor. They don't know you. But what they know are law enforcement officers. That to the young man or woman on the street, it's not about Councilperson Brooks. They may not know her. It's not about Supervisor Carson. They may not know him. To them, the face of government is the government official that conflicts with them most, and that's law enforcement on the street. So now what then becomes of budgets when law enforcement budgets are increased, but budgets to serve the needs of the people are decreased? The state is looking at another $8 billion challenge. What will be cut? Every few days you hear of schools that are being shut down. I read that in Los Angeles. The school district is now announced that it is to lay off, I think, is it 5,000?
6,000.
Nearly 6,000 employees to a school district. Now, what then happens with the children who were to go to class with a teacher or a tutor or a program to help suffice their needs? What's going to happen to those children? Now, LA School District is the second largest school district in the country. So 6,000 there, if there were 6,000 Oakland, you could have wiped out the whole district. Is that about accurate? That Oakland, Berkeley, San Leandro combined may not be 6,000 employees. I don't know the raw number. But LA School District cutting down 6,000 employees greatly due to the budget process we see happening at the state. When we arrived at Caravan 1, the budget process, the budget had just passed before we arrived. The governor was inside the Capitol making his announcement. We're told now by Assemblyman Swanson that they were so frightened of our coming there that on the heels of what they saw happening in Oakland after Brother Oscar was killed, that they were so frightened that we literally, on every occasion we've been, there's been snipers on the roofs. There have been dogs. Malcolm would have called them two-legged dogs, but I'm not Malcolm, so I'm not going to say that. But there have been dogs,
horses,
helicopters, SWAT teams, motorcycles, out of fear. Maybe they reflected on Panthers coming to the state capitol in the late 60s to demand the right to bear weapons. But you can't walk into the capitol with a weapon any longer. It's harder to get into the capitol building than it is to get into the prison. The metal detectors, the x-ray process, the same process to get on an airplane, essentially, you go through to get into the state capitol. So there won't be any more walking up declaring a right to bear arms. But there are issues that our community is compelled to respond to. Not only is it the power of the prison guard union, not only is it the power of the police lobbyists in unions, you also have the gun lobby. I heard this morning on KPOO, Brother Donald Lacey, whose beautiful daughter Loisha was murdered right up the street from here about 10 years ago. And he talked about how there was a discovery in West Oakland of a cargo of guns made available to whoever would run up and take it off the train. So he was discussing the fact that today, I think it is, in San Francisco, or soon, there's a gun show. And he had on the show with him a guest, a brother who has grown up, who spent much of his youth in the criminal element, but he's found himself, he's become himself, and now he's involved in the movement for peace in San Francisco, I believe after the murder of one of his sons. What a young man talked about, how when he lived the street life, that he and his partners would go to a gun show. And they would go and buy as many weapons as they could that allowed them to buy weapons at the time without an ID card. Now here, you go to a liquor store today and you want to buy cigarettes for those that smoke, they ID. If you look young enough. For those who drink alcohol, they ID you. if you look young enough. But the young man said they would go to gun shows. And they would find vendors at the gun show that would sell them guns without an ID. And they'd go out the door with those guns and go to the streets with those guns. And then he also mentioned that when these shows took place, you saw the part of the show where guns were attempted to be sold lawfully. But then there was another part of that show. The other part of that show was the under the table guns.
Mm-hmm, in the parking lot.
So when folks wonder, why are there so many weapons available to our young people? Mm-hmm. Well, to those in law enforcement, where does the rubber meet the road? We were told with Operation Nutcracker that many of those arrests occurred because they had done wiretapping or surveillance of cell phones. And they knew the whereabouts and the contacts of the 50 or more young people who had been in cell phone communication. In fact, they were boasting that they heard about a desire for murder and how they followed one of the young men on his cell phone. And they put officers on the trail of him, all the way to Hayward or San Leandro, San Lorenzo, where they say somewhere out there they lost track of them, but they had the capacity to follow them. Well, with as many guns that are in the cities in the hands of our youth, you mean to tell me they can't track a shipload of guns? A cargo of guns? You're reading every day about cases where automobiles have trackers placed on them. You mean to tell me that somebody out there is able to bring what is actually millions or perhaps even billions of dollars worth of weapons into the inner city and nobody in law enforcement has any idea where these guns come from? I think that they do. That's what I think. I don't think that there's any way possible that you can ship hundreds or thousands of weapons into a city and law enforcement with the technology at their disposal can't know where these guns came from or how they got here. So now we're dealing with the gun lobby. They don't want laws that place harsher restrictions on the network of gun distribution. Now, some say, well, we need our guns because we like to go hunting. Well, I don't think there's any public hunting in the city of Oakland. Not legal hunting. Is that true? So now that being said, why ought certain automated weapons be made available in the area? What law is it that provides someone a right to possess the kinds of weapons that we see coming up in the various murders in our cities? So as we're dealing in our approach to the Caravan for Justice and the demands that we're making out of Sacramento, those demands are being crafted day to day with your help and the help of many other wonderful minds. We want to now craft and package our issues so securely and force the state and those in state government to acknowledge that there's a crisis in the communities where we live. You heard the expression, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Well, among the problems we have is that we don't squeak enough as a community. We see what's happening where we live, but we often relegate it to private conversation. Kitchen table talk. Talk in the lunchroom, at work. But we don't bring to bear our concern as a force on government. So when Jerry Brown said that there's a force that drove him to back Operation Nutcracker, that like he did, he said, if you bring a force equal or greater to the force that is driving me, then I will certainly consider giving attention to the force that you brought. This is why we brought 1,000 people for the Caravan for Justice. We're bringing a new force to now say to those in state legislature, you know, we know you're voting on budgets, but we need for those in government to know that when you vote to cut out food stamps, you need to see who you're cutting. When you vote to increase incarceration methods, you need to see the impact of that. 1 in 3 black men in the state of California is in a certain age group is either incarcerated or under court supervision right now. Right now. Now, of the 2/3 that are left home, well, how many of them are simply on the track to become incarcerated? According to the experts, it is already determined by the 4th grade how many of our young people will land in jail, especially males. The numbers are already known, so they're strategizing their policy on the base of what they see as a forecast for the future of our people. In other words, it has been forecasted that we shall live forever as a group, as a permanent underclass. That's a forecast. Now, policies are crafted based on the forecast. If you heard a weather forecast that said there will be storming rain, we're expecting 10 inches of rain and high wind tomorrow, wouldn't you dress yourself accordingly for that forecast? That's how you act when you hear the weather. I didn't watch the weather on the news. It's a good, beautiful day today, isn't it? God is great, isn't he? We got a beautiful day. But I didn't happen to read the news. I wouldn't have changed my suit anyway. But I didn't happen to read the news. It's warmer than I expected. I was in San Francisco the other night, and I don't know what they do to the weather in San Francisco, Brother Francisco. I got out to the town hall and didn't bring a coat. But now, my point here is with the forecast. When there's a forecast, people make plans of action. And when there's a forecast that says by the 4th grade, a certain number of these young people are going to prison. It's called a school to prison pipeline. It's already forecast. Now the question becomes, when your 2nd grade is having a hard time in class, and the school tells you, oh yeah, this child needs some drugs. This child is hyperactive. This child has attention disorder. Well, any of us would have attention disorder if we spent 5 hours a day in front of a television with a video game in our hand without loving people around us to communicate with us. That's a family disorder. You don't fix the family disorder by breaking the family up. But if you look at policies in the state, the policies tend to break the family up. So if I can tell you, 1 in 3 men are either in jail or under court supervision, that now means 1 in 3 women, that's her husband, potentially. That's her son, that's her brother, that's her cousin, that's her uncle. That's the fathers to the children. That's the uncles to the children. And the more you break the family down, the greater you feed the prison industrial complex. So now the question becomes of us. Do we accept these predictions, or do we work night and day to beat these predictions?
We work night and day.
Say it again.
We work night and day.
To beat these predictions. We don't just accept that our young man is unable to learn. This is what they tell us in the schools. He can't learn. Well, the reality is he can learn. He learns plenty of things. How is it that that young man that you declared can't learn can get out on the street and learn how to hustle in a few days? He can't learn, but he knows how to avoid the police for a few years. He can't learn, but he learns how to survive on the street where his life is in jeopardy. He can't count, but he counts money on the street every day. And if that money comes off wrong, he doesn't get fired. He loses his life. You all with me now? Evidently, this is a young man of high intellect. And if you challenge him, he'll say, what, you want me to work at McDonald's? Then he'll challenge you. Not that he's right in his moral assessment of what he's doing for a living, but he's intelligent enough to know and tell you straight. Some will say, well, you all are just pimping out there, you pastors. He'll say that. Y'all with me now? Say it quick. Look at that car you ride. And you can't put me in a car like the one you ride and don't talk to me. So I'm going to talk to my partner over here, because at least he's breaking me off a few dollars for the hustles I got going, and maybe I can get a car like this. This is a mindset. But now the question becomes, is there enough love in our hearts to reach him through that mindset? We don't throw him away. Society have already thrown him away. Because when society throws away a young man in that condition, whether you know it or not, slavery is still legal. It's still legal. So the 13th Amendment abolished slavery except under a specific condition. And that's the condition of incarceration. So now any and all of those incarcerated are now subjected to slave labor. You got a license plate on your car? Where was it made? You get backpacks for your children, for your school shopping. Where were they made? You have on glasses, some of you. Well, Lens Crafters has a facility in Solano State Penitentiary. I don't know what part of the process they're producing. I don't know if it's the frames or if it's the lenses. But it's the lenses. It's a lot of state penitentiary. You have some well-trained young men. Who it seems to me, if they're well-trained, they don't have to work at Solano for nothing. Why don't Lens Crafters hire them at home when they're at the mall looking for a job? See, we go to the mall and they say, get out of my face. They lock you up and they let you make the lenses. Yes, they lock you up and you can sew the jeans. They lock you up and you can even take the credit card information from those who are purchasing plane tickets. We went on a tour of the federal prison for women in Dublin some years ago. And when we arrived there, lo and behold, I came across a sister whom I love as a black elected official. She served as a city council person in Compton. But because of her willingness to serve the community, they actually pursued her with a sting operation. When we went to go see the assemblyman, his chief of staff told us that because of new rulings, we have to record and report everybody that we meet with. In other words, you can't meet with Brother Muhammad from Oakland in a private meeting. And we can't go to Starbucks and order a venti caramel macchiato with extra sauce and zimzams and jujubes and a scone on the side. We can't do that because now they're mandated in government under law that they can't accept a gift of lunch or take a lobbyist out to eat for anything it values more than $5. I didn't know that. I thought we'd just meet you at the spot and we have a meeting. Sometimes it's better to not meet inside government headquarters. Because that's a recorded meeting. And we can't have a private conversation. Not that anything unlawful is being said, but sometimes you don't want everything that you said published in the newspaper. Well, this is simply to suggest that my little sister in Compton, she got a few dollars from one of these lobbying efforts somewhere. But they locked her up and threw away the key. They came along and got the mayor of the city, similarly. And they got some other city council people in Compton. But I noticed somehow, have you noticed that when Bush became president, he was a millionaire before he got there? Did you all notice that? By the way, his daddy was a millionaire before he got there. You ever heard of Mr. Carter, president? He was a millionaire before he got there. How about Nixon? He was a millionaire when he got there. How about Kennedy? Oh, multi-millionaire before he got there. Did you know the Kennedy family got their wealth from illegally running drugs and alcohol? But when a black elected official accepts lunch, it comes under much more careful scrutiny. Every I has to be dotted. Every T has to be crossed, because it was never the intention of those that passed the Civil Rights Bill and the Voting Rights Bill. They never really wanted to do it. You know how you know they didn't want to do it? They put a timeline on the Voting Rights Bill. It wasn't an eternal bill. It had to be renewed. How do you put a time cap on justice? Sister said, our God is justice. Well, God is eternal. He has no beginning nor end. You don't put a time cap on justice. But as we're looking at those in government, nearly everything that was achieved as a result of the civil rights movement of the 60s by the 90s was turned upside down. Isn't a 9 like a 6 upside down? So the things that were gained, by the time the 90s roll in, nearly every one of them was lost. This is why we know that the movement that we have now become a part of is a movement not to command temporary change, not to produce temporary improvement, but we're now saying in the halls of government, this is what is good in the eyes of God, and this is what is demanded from the hearts of people, that we must have justice from government now, and we're not going away. In fact, we're going back next month for Caravan for Justice 3. Now let me say as I close, in order to secure this requires coalition and the great efforts of us in this circle. On Monday evening, we had a meeting of coalition groups present with us, and I don't have my list in front of me, but I'll try to recite it, was the Coalition Against Police Execution, Kate, there, Sister Jerika, Brother Tony, and another person, having with us an opportunity to jointly organize, Christoph and No Justice, No Bart, and other representatives from that group. There with us was Puebla, Sister Rashida Grenaz, whose husband was murdered by OPD about 10 years ago and has become one of the front-running activists against police brutality efforts here in the city of Oakland. Pueblo stands for People United. Anybody know the federal meaning? Pueblo. People United, EBLO.
For better living in Oakland.
Say it again.
People United for Better Living in Oakland.
Thank you. People United for Better Living in Oakland. Pueblo is a significant force in this city. There with us, of course, Dr. Tosco, Brother Wilson Riles. I'm trying to remember what group. There's another group that was born in honor of Oscar Grant. Cotwatch Berkeley, Cotwatch Oakland, and the group that was born and called itself New Year's Call for Justice, I think. What was it called? New Year's Movement for Justice. All these coalition groups gathered together to secure a more concrete plan to move this movement forward. Give them a big round of applause. Now, as you know, we call this town hall process a community council. We're actually developing grassroots government. We don't have a president, a vice president. My mouth just happens to run quite often. I can't help myself. However, we just stood after meeting in this room with a group of pastors and activists and elected officials to stand for justice for Brother Oscar Grant after his horrific murder. And now it's actually developing a movement. So we hope that in our next meeting, which is a week from this Monday, I see my sister here from BAM, and we want BAM to join us at that table. And if there's other organizers here that are part of an organization, of course, the Grant family is part of the table with us. The table is being set. That a movement would press forward to secure justice for our people. So I want to give some time now to, if there's anyone here from the Grant family who would like to help us. We know we've got a request that we've honored and are honoring for support to prepare to introduce our president, Barack Obama, to what has happened here in Oakland. And one of the things I will say is that they have something called plausible deniability. What that means is, for an example, when a police officer shoots a young man on New Year's Eve, and you go to the police chief to ask him what happened and what is he doing to make right the wrong, the police chief says, well, I don't know what happened. I know there's a video, but the video is inconclusive. I don't have the information directly because Johannes Nezeli wouldn't talk to me. Therefore, I, sorry, sad Chief G, can do nothing to make it better. In politics, you have something called plausible deniability. Staffers didn't tell me what the issue was. And you rarely meet a politician that doesn't meet you face to face with your sincere call for justice with some measure of civility. Now, if you find a politician that says, get out of my face with all that radical stuff, then we know what we're dealing with, straight up. Just straight up, need not waste our time in bothering with it. In fact, there was an elected official very recently who said he didn't want to hear anything about these black issues. When things happen, some respond like that. But most, they smile at you, they shake your hands, they give you a card and tell you to call their assistant. Is that how it happens? They want you to speak to the assistant so that they can always claim they didn't know what your claim was. So while our brother is president, we want to make sure that he understands what happened. Of course, when Brother Oscar was murdered, he hadn't taken office yet. But that doesn't mean that as a black man, as a man, that any of us have a right to ignore this egregious injustice that the whole world is looking at. And so while I know he's a very busy man, I'm sure of that, but as busy as he is, I'm sure that if we spoke to President Obama, he wouldn't respond to us the way this staffer responded in Sacramento when I said I'm speaking for the family of Oscar Grant, and he asked, who is Oscar Grant? I am sure that President Obama, just as a black man,
right. Absolutely.
He was that long before he was president. As a black man, I am certain that he's aware that a young black man was gunned down unarmed and without threat to a police officer here in the West Coast. So I would like you to join me in receiving whoever from the family would like to share about our next steps. I know we have a letter, a writing campaign. Is there anything you wanted to share, Sister Diana, or Sister Monica? Please receive Sister Diana.